Welcome to Breakfast of Choices, the weekly podcast that shares life stories of transformation. Each episode holds space for people to tell their true, raw, and unedited story of overcoming intense adversity from addiction and incarceration, mental illness, physical and emotional abuse, domestic violence, toxic families, codependency, and more. Trauma comes in so many forms. I'm your host, Joe Summers, and also someone who hit my lowest point before realizing that I could wake up every day and make a better choice, even if it was a small one. So let's dive into this week's story together to learn from and find hope through someone's journey from rock bottom to rock solid. Because I really do believe you have a new chance every day to wake up and make a change to create your own breakfast of choices.
Good morning. Welcome to Breakfast of Choices podcast. I'm your host, Joe Summers. I'm here with Philip Kell. He goes by Flip. I met Flip on Facebook through some recovery websites and some really good work that he is doing on Facebook right now. And I was really happy for him and proud of him for being on Facebook and sharing his story and being so positive and talking with others about recovery and kind of what it's meant to him, that I just reached out to him and asked him if he would be a guest on the podcast. And he said he'd love to. And here he is this morning. And we're just going to go ahead and get into Flip's story. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm super glad that you're here. And like I said, I'm really enjoying what you're doing on Facebook. And I feel like, you know, just offering that hope and encouragement is so very important. And you've already been doing that. So I'm super excited that you're here. Thank you.
And I appreciate it. Yeah, glory to God for that one. I mean, I'm going to do my part and keep my part to get the message out there. Like, for me, recovering out loud is like the best therapy for me. Like, that's what keeps me going, knowing that, you know, it's holding me accountable, and I get out there and I put myself out there and I just, you know, spill my heart out there to try to keep others from making the same mistakes that I've made.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it's about, right? Turning our pain into purpose and sharing our story with others to help them not make the same mistakes. So, well, go ahead and share a little bit with us today, you know, kind of where you grew up and kind of how it all got started for you.
Yeah, no problem. So, like, I was born in Illinois, and my dad had left at a young age. I really don't even remember him being there, but he took off and went to Texas and had his own life going. And my mom had met my stepdad, and I think it was in third grade or so, and we moved to Indiana, and things were good there. You know, I was a good student. I didn't really, you know, get in trouble. I didn't have a whole lot of friends, but I had a select few that I ran with. And, you know, throughout high school, I got pretty close to a few buddies. And even then, you know, I really didn't party or anything like that. We raced cars. We skated. You know, we went to concerts. Like, we did, you know, normal high school stuff. You know, some of them indulged, you know. I didn't. You know, they would give me a hard time sometime. Like, oh, Flip over there. Drugs are bad. And, you know, and I was so against it in high school. And, I think I smoked weed for the first time at, like, 11 or 12 or something like that. And found it in my stepdad's drawer, actually. A little Tupperware container. And, you know, a little metal ball one there. And I was like, oh, it's this. But, you know, I was a pretty good kid, you know. And, in high school, I was with the same girl all through high school. And I ended up getting prom king. She was prom queen. I thought, you know, life was good and everything would be all right. And, you know, after high school, things took a little turn and, you know, some cheating happened and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. That started off, you know, right then there, that started my life off right there. Like, not on my part, but then I ended up, you know, getting back and getting my revenge and doing the same thing, thinking that was okay, you know, being young and dumb. And,
after
that, you know, I mean, like, I didn't grow up with a whole lot of money. So in high school, though, I got a job as a senior. Since I already had all my credits, there was a teacher there that got me a job at the local glass shop. And so I would leave at 10:30 every day from high school. My senior year, I'd go to work at this glass shop. I would work there. I'd get off from there. I'd go to Dairy Queen, work a shift there. If I wasn't working at Dairy Queen, I was working at the detail shop. I did all this just to afford a nice car and nice clothes, because, you know, my family didn't, you know, have a whole lot of money. So, like, And the girl I dated through high school, their parents did have money. So, like, I slowly, like, started trying to, like, fit in. You know what I mean? Like, trying to be that person, making money and having a social status. And so, like, I get out of high school. I'm making good money. I get my own place. You know, I move out immediately. I get my own bachelor pad. And money I was making at my job just wasn't, you know, enough. And so, next thing I know, you know, I'm selling weed, you know, selling drugs. And I got depression, anxiety, meds my whole life, you know, because I suffered with a lot of depression, anxiety, and I was selling those, and still wasn't, you know, really getting in a whole lot of trouble or nothing like that. But then I got introduced to meth. So I was with a buddy. I've never done it, I was so against it, and we went to another buddy's house one night, and he was like, oh, man, you know, it ain't that bad. You gotta try it. You gotta try it. That was the worst mistake of my life. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love that guy that day. He's clean, you know, it wasn't his fault. I was a grown man. I made that choice. You know what I mean? But it wasn't a week later. There's four of us moving into a place, you know, going, tapping in hydrous tanks out in the cornfield. Because back then it wasn't crystal meth. It was a hydrous meth.
Right.
So it was it was really, really addictive drug. It was just, like, it grabbed a hold of me bad. And the next thing I know, I'm out cooking it. Stealing, do whatever I can, you know, to get that habit, you know, traveling from state to state, trying to get Sudafed bills just to make meth and just out there wilding out. Like, we were out there getting it. Like, it was bad. And we had this little bit apartment right in the middle of Hopstead, Indiana, which is like a small country town, Catholics, you know, and it was right in the middle of a subdivision. Like, rich people all around us. Like, it's right in the middle of the subdivision. And we're out there, we're cooking every day, and there's people just showing up at our door. Even the guy upstairs looked above us. Is it ready yet? You know, and, like, it was not looking good. And I happened to go up to the gas station one day there in town, and there was a pamphlet. And it said, how did they notice signs of people cooking meth around you?
Oh, no.
And it was like, it said, tinfoiled up windows. I'm like, check. It says, excessive trash bags outside. I was 20, check. You know, traffic all night, all day, check. Everything, I'm just like, I'm like, oh, no, this is bad. We're going to hit. We're going to prison. Like, I'm getting out of here.
Couldn't you smell it? Couldn't you smell it?
Oh.
Could you not?
That's
like number one sign. you can smell it all around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so we were done with it. Like, we would smoke it off in the apartment with muriatic acid, you know, we burnt holes in the carpet, we'd go out in the car, do the same thing, you know, with bandanas on, trying to cook it in the car, and it was just ridiculous. So I knew at that time, I was like, well, this is not right for me. I'm getting out of here before something happens. So I ended up going to Illinois to my grandma's house. And, you know, she was my rock. Like, throughout my childhood, I stayed with her a lot. Every weekend I would go there, and, you know, she was the one that got me into church. She taught me how to fish, taught me how to shoot a basketball, you know, because my dad wasn't around. Like, my grandma was my everything, you know.
And this sounds great.
So I went there, and she had my back, you know, she had my back, and I stayed there and got clean for about a month. And then the next girlfriend I had, you know, broken up with to go to Illinois, she had gotten back over to me, and I ended up going back to Indiana. And I went to a party one night, and I wasn't using dope, but I'd been on Xanax, Klonopin, a half crown of Jaeger between, like, three other guys. And I had a buddy hit me up, and he was like, hey, I need to ride to Evansville. A guy owes me money, yada, yada. I'll fill your tank up and give you some weed. I'm like, nah, man, I'm good. I'm drunk. I've been taking pills. And then he wouldn't stop. He was relentless. So I ended up going and picking him up. I wake up the next day in a drunk tank. I don't remember any of it. Everything that I know from it, you know, it was all told from depositions. Like, I wake up in the drunk tank. I have an A felony dealing in crack cocaine, a D felony dealing in marijuana, D possession of controlled substance. And I thought my life was over. I thought I was done. That A felony in Princeton, Indiana, that carries like a 20 to 50, I think. So I was looking at a lot of time. I was still, you know, in a loss. I didn't want to believe it. And, like, I was still sitting there in jail, and I didn't have crack money. My bail was like $50,000, I think, $5,000 cash. He got out like the next day. Let's just face it. He had money. I didn't. You know, he was doing this thing. I stole a little bit of weed. That was it at that time. He gets bonded out. I get bonded out probably a few weeks later. And during that time, there was a federal drug raid from Texas to Indiana. And I think they got like 30-something people throughout all those states. And he was a part of that. And so they came to me with my deal because I guess the night that I took him to his buddy's house ended up actually being his family. And everything that he did there was recorded because it was a scene. And they ended up coming to me, dropping that A felony. I pled guilty to my 2 Ds. I did a little 18 months, juvenile on a work release. I did all that. You know, I get out. I felt, you know, house arrest immediately. I think 2 or 3 times my fiance left me at the time. I was like, I was living with her and her mom, and I was on house arrest, and she was like, get out. So I'm like, all right. So I ended up leaving there, and I ended up moving in with my cousin, Kara. She lived down there by my mom's house, a few blocks on Seminole. Moved in with Kara, and right next door to Kara was a girl that I had messed around with a couple times through high school and after high school, and she's with still the same guy that she'd always been with throughout high school. And they had just been married for about 6 months. And I moved in next door and, you know, plans rekindled. And he was a raging alcoholic. You know, like, he'd come home on his door around and everything. And one night she had enough of it and she left him. And we ended up moving in with each other and life was good. I was sober. You know, we got a new house. I had my first baby, my baby girl, Leah, and life was good. You know, Leah was 6 months old, and we just got married, and we went to Tennessee on Harley, and did the whole marriage thing up there, had some friends come up there, and we all rode the Dragon's Tail, and it was a good time, and we get back home, and it's a couple weeks later, and I ended up having a wreck on my motorcycle. It was bad. You know, I should have took my life. I flipped it. So somewhere around the turn, my cousin was in front of me. So I never got my license. I had my permit for my motorcycle. And finally, I was like, all right, I need to go get my license. So I don't have to ride no stupid number anymore. Let's go do this. I go up there. You know, I'm the smallest guy on the biggest bike. Pass it flawlessly. Get my license. Along the way home, he's like, let's take the back way. We're going to take that way. I'm like, oh, cool with that. So he's in front of me. I'm behind him, and I see his rear tire just squirrely. And before I can do anything, my front wheel just locks up like this. It slides off the side of the road. It hits a little embankment, and it flips.
Uh-oh.
And when it does, my leg is stuck in between the tank and handlebars, cracking and pushing my femur up my leg up here by my hip.
Oof.
And I land, rip every shoulder in this ligament, or every ligament in this right shoulder. Helmet that I had on was a fake helmet from Tennessee. We got just for the wedding. It had no padding in it, nothing. It was a novelty helmet. I think I paid like $10-15 for it. They gave me a DOT sticker to stick on the back. It was not real.
Oh.
But it saved my life. Like, yeah, I had gouges on it from front to back. So I woke up in the middle of the hospital with my wife. She was a nurse. She was working there at the time. She's freaking out. Back in the surgery, you know, I wake up and pull covers back and I just see everything. You know, from below my waist down, it's just black, purple, look like Barney.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm never riding again.
I've said that a few times.
Yeah, that didn't happen. I ended up riding a long recovery. It took about a year for a wheelchair, a ball period. I took cane. Mm-hmm. And so, like, during that time of healing and everything, like, I slowly, you know, started getting back into drugs. Like, I didn't want to do anything. I ended up picking up meth and, like, she'd be at work, kids would be at her mom's house. I'd be out doing dope, cooking dope, coming back home by the time they got there, take 4 or 5 Xannies, pass out in a chair, cereal on my lap, drooling all over myself, just being dumb.
Yeah.
Being real dumb.
Yeah.
You know, she gave me a lot of chances, and we'd went to a separation for about a week, and I was just out there. I'd been out there, little wait probably about 7-8 days, and took like 4 or 5 Xanax in the middle of like cooking 2 batches of dope. And I go to leave my buddy's house, and if I'm gonna see him later, and I would have put my hand on the doorknob. And I must have stood there for 30, 45 minutes, stuck. It's stuck. Not there, just right.
Yeah.
And finally, he's like, "You gonna leave?" "Oh, yeah." And he tells me how long I'm standing there. My mom, you just gonna let me leave like that? You're not gonna take my keys and nothing? But no, I end up leaving. And I guess before I could even get from Port Ranch to Princeton, which is about a 7-8 minute drive, I probably had 5 or 6 people calling me in for erratic driving. I end up getting pulled over in town there by the McDonald's. I don't remember it. This is all from like the newspaper and from what people tell me. My ex-wife, my daughter, her family was at the Ponderosa at the time, which is right across the street from McDonald's. Oh. And they see me get arrested. My daughter, you know, she wasn't old enough to remember, but she seen me get arrested. And I went to jail for driving under influence of methamphetamines, possession of marijuana. I had Xanax, but I was prescribed 90 school buses a month after my wreck. So I didn't get in trouble for that. But I get out, go to rehab, try to save my marriage. It was called the Lighthouse Facility. It was a Christian-based facility. You know, you had to do so much classwork, so much church work. You have to go to work after you were there for so long and got to that level of being, you know, able to go to work and do your home passes. And, you know, I did it and moved up real quick, became an accountability officer, found my relationship with God again from there. But really wasn't the place for me. There was a lot of things going on there that I didn't really. So that place kind of just rubbed me the wrong way. So I graduated as soon as possible. I was out of there in 7 months. I came home. Life was good again. You know, I got a job at the Toyota plant back home. One of the Toyota plants back home, one of their suppliers. And I was a temporary worker there. I started off as a temp worker and worked my way up. You know, I was putting that same motivation and dedication that I did to running and drugging into my work and my family this time.
Good.
I was doing that. I was a temp for a short amount of time. They made me a full-time worker. Then they made me an end-of-the-line repair welder. I never welded before in my life, but through all the years of glass, I definitely had ran caulking guns, automated caulking guns. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it came natural to me. Mm-hmm. So they made me a repair welder at end-of-the-line there, and then it wasn't much longer. They made me a team leader. Mm-hmm. And then within like a year, I think it was, I moved all the way up to a group leader. I had, I think 70-some people underneath me, 4 team leaders under me, and a whole lot of paid for it in computer work. But life is good. You know, yeah. I was making over $80,000 a year. I was married. She was a nurse. She was making good money. We had a beautiful home. My son was born well. So I had my daughter and my son. We had a picket fence, you know, 5 lake in the subdivision we lived in. Like, things couldn't be better. I thought to myself, you know, I never, ever thought someone coming up the way I did would ever have a home like this, a beautiful family like this. Mm-hmm. And I was blessed. I truly, truly was blessed. And then, like, 2014 hit. And my wife starts getting, you know, lonely because I'm working like shit. I'm working, you know, 14 hours a day, 6-7 days a week.
Yeah.
She wants me to go back to doing glass. But I thought, you know, okay, my body's good. I've healed up from this wreck. I can probably go back to doing glass work. And before I could even get to that point, though, and I'm working, finishing out the last couple months, you know, I'm slowly start dipping back into pills. Because in that same year, my sister, Crystal, God bless her soul, she was like 35, and she passed away that year of a brain aneurysm, unexpectedly.
So sorry.
That messed with me.
Yeah.
It still messes with me.
Yeah.
Like, she wasn't like the rest of us. She was manic bipolar. She had a lot of mental health issues, learning disabilities. She went to special ed school. She was involved with the Special Olympics and like major temper issues. And she didn't really grow up around me. She was always moving around, and you know, she'd call me a lot of time, and she'd be throwing her fits, and I'd get tired of it and listen, wouldn't answer her phone calls, and that wasn't right of me. It was wrong with me. No, you only get so many sisters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but give yourself some grace on that. Give yourself some grace on that.
She called my phone and I didn't answer it. She left me a voicemail. She said, "Hey, bud, it's sis. I just want to know I love you. telling him I love them, I miss you guys, and she started to cry. And she hung up the phone. 2 days later, I call saying that she'd been life-fighted.
Wow.
I get to the hospital. She's laying there, all kinds of tubes. And I thought she'd make it through it.
Yeah, that's tough.
They said that she started some signs, like, you know, that she was responding. She was moving her toes, moving her fingers. But within like 2 days,
wow.
I was planning on going up there the next morning. I had to work all that night, and I was getting ready to head up there and got the call that she suffered a massive stroke while in there. So
sorry.
She passed away.
Yes.
And I left, and that left a huge scar on me. I never got to tell her I loved her. I never got to tell her she meant to me.
Yeah.
The only memory she has of me is being a dick, being so prideful, being about my money, and about my drugs.
Yeah.
That changed me yet again in 2014, leaving the Toyota place into Glassfield. I was hurt. I was needing to cope. I started to find things to cope with. I get to the glass shop. I'm working with a guy who I knew used dope. And like an idiot, I thought I was good. No, he wasn't out there putting in front of my face, nothing like that. You know, he was respectful of me. But as time went on and me dealing with the death of my sister, I gave in. I used. And I was using every day at work. The same thing, I'll come to Xanax before I get back home. So the wife wouldn't know. She wasn't stupid. She started to pick up. Oh, I had this beautiful home with my two kids. And here I am using dope again. About to miss everything. And it's not that I wasn't thinking of them, that I didn't love them because they were my world. They're everything that I wanted.
Yeah.
There was it's nothing addiction. I wanted more than was my kids and my wife. I didn't want to be out there having kids with everyone, be married 6-7 times. That was the last thing I wanted to do. Yeah. I didn't want that. I had everything I needed, and that dope, the dope strong. I was weak.
Yes.
So yes. I'm relapsing. She kicks me out again. She draws up divorce papers. And like, I'm out there just wilding out. I'm like, yeah, screw it all. You know, we had plenty of money in the bank. Her father passed away and left us off pretty good. And like an asshole, I think we drew like $17,000 before the divorce even hit. Staying in hotel rooms, running around with women, getting ounces of dope, like just being a stupid.
Yeah.
And I get back to the hotel room one day that I'm staying in, and I'm with a girl named Stormy from Illinois, and we were just getting ready to go out to dinner, and I hear thump thump at the door. I go to the door, the state trooper, detective, down the floor. I'm like, what's going on? They said, we got an arrest for my dude, Billy, at the time. I said, well, you're at the wrong place. You don't live here. Ain't nothing to do here with him. And I said, that's a warrant for an arrest, not a warrant for search of my address. Because at the time, I was receiving mail there and everything. That was my home.
Oh,
they barged in. Said he smelled marijuana. I hadn't even smoked in there yet. I hadn't even smoked. I just got off work.
Mm-hmm.
And they start searching all my stuff, and they go straight to where I kept my dope. I kept it in a false Dr. Pepper can inside a 24-pack of other Dr. Pepper cans. They knew already exactly what I was doing. I don't know how they knew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a good feeling because, I mean, I paid cash for that room. They didn't have my name. I was in the order. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knew I was staying there. That same weekend, I was supposed to have my kids. It was Easter weekend, and they told me I could bail out that night. I get to jail. No bond. Possession of methamphetamine is another felony. Easter weekend. You know, I left my kids hurt. I'm like, man, like, serious, really? No, I don't know. Here I am. I'm in jail. Not really getting to see my kids. I get out. I get probation. You know, because I have money. I was able to pay for a good attorney. I had a job. Then I get probation. And I meet a girl. Who I get engaged to, and life's good. I'm doing good again. You know, I'm sober. She gets pregnant, and I don't even know at that point in time. They honestly, what caused me to relapse, but more than anything, I guess it could have been like, you know, would catch her every once in a while. She had an addiction to the water, and she would hide it from me. It's sort of behind my back and this and that, which also brought along like a lot of PTSD of, you know, other people hurting me from cheating, lying to me with dope, everything like that. It's just intensified throughout life, you know what I mean? You don't think my life. You take everything to the extreme, and like along with PTSD, that can make the relationship hell for anybody that gets involved with someone that's dealing with something like that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But, long story short, you know, I relapsed, and she gets to me. But she gets to me in the bathroom. She had left food at license place or something like that for a car, and I go to the bathroom. I get my kid out. I'm about to hit it, and she catches me, and she just goes ape crap on me, you know what I mean? She just goes crazy. She starts to call cops, you know what I mean? I had my work van at the house, and just my whole life just went into shambles again. And I'm like, the hell with this? I'm not going to jail. I'm getting out of here. She's like, oh, yeah, but I knew my baby anyways. It's like my other baby mama that they used my, you know, my past drug convictions against me. Like, and I'm in a small town. They have the same attorney. Like, I have no attorney. Anyways, I take off to Portland. I have a partner, Oregon. I have a buddy out there from high school. We moved out there. There's a sailboat. So I'm going out to Portland. Boom. I go to Portland. I'm doing good. Like, life's good. And I'm working, doing auto glass again, making good money. And I meet this girl. Stupid. I'm in Portland with all this money, recovering addict. Like, and the biggest thing out there is meth.
Yeah.
Like, really? It was dumb to think I even had a chance. I meet her, I start doing dope. Next thing I know, me and my buddies into it. I'm moving off the sailboat, living homeless in a tent in Delta Park in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just wilding out again, not caring about life, being dumb. Yeah. I'm out there for a year or so. I end up leaving, coming home, thinking I can do this. I'm gonna get my kids back. I got this. Nope. Met another girl. Well, this time this girl was kind of addicted to alcohol. And that was a little bit into it. I relapsed. I'm on my way home one night to my mom's house. She's waiting for me there. My fiance's there. Her girlfriend. She's waiting for me there at the time. And I get pulled over. I just bought a car. Hey, off Craigslist. I was going to fix it and make money on it and flip it. And I turned onto my mom's street and I hit a pothole. And when I hit this pothole, because there was damage on the recorder panel, it popped. A chunk pops up. Before I can even get pulled over to shut it, there's a cop busting you to pull me over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, great. Here we go. I ain't been home 3 weeks.
Like,
here we go again. So they search me. And I don't find nothing. And while I'm there, they have like court papers for me for my ex-wife taking me court over my kids again. And while I'm waiting there, I told them they couldn't search my car. Well, they searched my car.
Yeah.
And they found in my wallet, like, I'm saying, it's like not even a tenth of a gram. And they tell me they don't know if it's enough to prosecute me, that they're going to have to send it off to send off a prosecutor to see if he's going to take the case. So I wait, you know, it's like 2-3 weeks go by. And in the meantime, I get a glass job out in Boston, Massachusetts, making good money. And it's a good opportunity for me. They're going to pay for my housing for 3 months. They're going to pay for my traveling expenses. They're going to let me bring my girlfriend or something with me. And I'm like, yes, this is what I need. So, like, I'm getting hold of the cop shop. I go up there to him. I go to the prosecutor's office. I'm told at the end of the day that this girl, you're good to go. Not by the prosecutor's office. That was by a local sheriff in town. They told me I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. No more had an issue. That no one's going to come of it. I take off. We go. Boston. Living life good. We're there. Things are going good. But, like I said, she was addicted to alcohol. We weren't doing dope or nothing at the time. We were going to go to Boston. We saw there by Friday. Well, she was not wanting to get off her alcohol. I came home one day from work. She's crazy drunk. Trying to get onto her to chill out. You know, you're trying to sell my business from the hotel room. Like, calm down. Ends up pulling a knife, going crazy. The cops come. Mm-hmm. I tell them, you know, I won't press charges on her. All this and that. She's just drunk. They don't take her to jail. The next day, it's a Friday. I'm a lawyer home. Marijuana was legal out there. So, like, I'm smoking on the way home. Like, life's good. You know what I mean? Like, everything's good. I'm making good money. You know, looking for a new house. I pull into the hotel. Before I could even get to the parking spot, three Plymouth County Sheriff's guy come running out the hotel office. Freeze, get down on the ground, you're a fugitive. Justice, they're opening my door before I can even get apart. When they were there the day before, I guess my name came back the next day that I had a warrant out of Indiana. So they take me to Kingston Jail, and from there they transferred me to Plymouth Correctional Facility. And like, I cannot believe how big that place was, how many people were in there, how intimidating it was. Like, it was just crazy. It's nothing I've ever seen before. Like, I mean, there were people like, last name Pagawan and stuff, talking about how they're in there for trafficking fentanyl and everything. And that really when it opened my eyes to the fentanyl epidemic, because like back on the again, it hadn't hit yet.
Yeah.
Like I've seen all these people in there and I've heard all their stories and what they're in there for. And it's just not for the fentanyl, it's the things that led them to do. And man, I tell you what, that's another demon. And I will for anybody that's going through the struggle of that fentanyl use. So, I mean, I pray that they get off of that. But anyways, well, while I'm there, I meet a guy, he's put my life by, you know, grace of God again, like, a real good dude, his name's Brian, he was out there in Massachusetts, and he was in there for just for a little DUI, he had never been to jail before, he's a little big guy, you know, real comedian, like, he's a car salesman, and he's this good dude. No, they ended up extraditing me from Boston, on a plane, back to Indiana for a possession charge. I get there, in jail. My attorney tells me, like, they're wanting to give you 3 years DOC time. I'm like, you want to send me to prison for a tenth of a gram of dope? You guys are crazy. I'm not taking that. Not taking that. There's no way I'm going to take that. And I end up, well, she says, well, if you can bond out, I'll get you a better deal. So I reached out to my buddy Brian. He had then been released from jail there in Boston. And me out from Princeton jail. I get out. And she tells me, you know, 2 weeks later, I go back up to her. She calls me. She says, hey, come up there and talk to you. So I'm thinking she's got another, you know. And she says, hey, I still want to give you 3 years. My mom ended up, bless her soul, she ended up getting me a loan, $5,000. I got me an attorney. And he got me out of it all with just probation. Like, no, 3 years in prison. He got me in probation. So it just goes to show, you know, how much money costs.
Oh, yeah.
But I do that, and in the meantime, you know, I'm flying back and forth from Boston to Indiana for a few months after this. Me and old girl breaks up. I stayed out there. She moved back to her mom's house. And so I'm flying back and forth home in between court dates and yada yada. Yeah, it lasted for a little bit. And then after I got probation, I moved home so I could be there for probation. And there you go. Story of my life, right? This girl was actively used. I'd been sober, and we hadn't hung out yet. And first night we hung out, I knew immediately, like, she's using. So I tell her, I'm like, so you gonna tell me or what? And she's like, what do you mean? And I said, you don't know. She's like, how do you know? I'm like, what do you mean? You're not gonna get that past me. You're talking to a professional here.
Yeah, right? How do we know?
And, so time goes on, I'm trying to get her to quit, and then one day she's not hearing me, like an idiot, thinking I could be strong, and be like, look, I'm going to show you how easy it is to quit. I did it one night with her.
Oh, no.
There it went. Lost her good job. Like, when I moved back home to Indiana, I had a good job at Big Battery's motorcycle shop. I was a fabricator welder there. Like, I mean, life is good. I got her a job there. We were making good money. Next thing you know, she's relapsing. I'm relapsing. For 3 years, and then it was just scrounging every day to get by. Doing whatever we could to get dopes in our body and make sure kids had food. That's all it was.
Yeah.
And, like, it wasn't a toxic relationship. Like, I mean, she had her many flaws just as well as I did, but, man, it was physical. That way. And I had been using all that time, and you know, throughout my life, I'd already been hospitalized 3 times, I think it was, with pancreatitis. And this time with her, I remember I started getting sick on the bathroom floor, and I couldn't do nothing. I was so dehydrated, I was just done. My body was done, I was weak, and I sat there and threw up for hours and hours and hours. Finally, she was on my stepdad, and he picks me up, takes me to the hospital, and I'm in there for 3 or 4 days. I just, my body was over it. I was in bad shape. Doctors telling me if I keep using pill, I'm not gonna live. You know, me and there just using the bathroom on myself in the hospital bed. Like, I couldn't. Yeah. It was bad. And you know what I mean? Like, start talking to God, trying to find my relationship while I was on that hospital bed, you know, asking where I need to be, like, help me get through this, you know, like, we always, you know, emergency credits, right? You know, use them as a on-demand guy, instead of on-time guy, right? Yeah. But, you know, this time it was different for me. Like, I got out of the hospital, and I didn't want to use them more. Like, someone was telling me that's not the life for me. It's not going to get you where you need to be, but, like, you've got to make that change.
Yeah.
But I knew something was right the whole time in the hospital. You know, I'm begging her to come see me. She's getting mad. I had a buddy of like 20 years. It was Amy's buddy. And I try to get him to come see me. He's getting mad because I'm probably by myself. And like, I just wanted to see someone that was supposed to care for me. I was scared. You know, lean. I just wanted some support. And I get home and couldn't find out, you know. Of course, they had been hanging out the whole time I was in the hospital. She didn't want to come out and say that, but she told me he had been there. And it hurt my soul. And I tell her I can't use no more and this and that. She's like, go on down for that. We can try that again. Well, next morning, literally, not even 12 hours later, she's kicking me out, hit me in the face with an aerosol can in front of kids, like, telling she don't want to be with me and I would be shit and this and that and the other. I leave. I was done. Right? Y'all have each other. I love you kids. You mean the world to me. I gotta go. I left. I went to my mom's house. And this is now February 14th, 2023. That very next day, after going to my mom's house, I go to court with nothing. No attorney, no money. You're living like that, straight out the hospital. Go to court with my ex-wife for a case on taking the rights to my kids. I had no option, I thought, at the time. I ended up signing rights over to my kids. And that is something like I'll never truly forgive myself for. Mm-hmm. Like, my kids are my everything. You know, they're my world. And my selfishness, my addiction, my running, everything that I've done, like, led me to losing them. So I lost my kids that week, too. On top of losing that relationship, on top of being in the hospital, I lost my kids at me.
So that's your rock bottom for sure.
I'm going to post on Facebook. Look, guys, I usually wait until I'm in trouble or in jail to ask for help, but I can't live this life on door. I need to get away from this town. I'm not strong enough to save all towns and, you know, be clean.
Mm-hmm.
Or be a productive member to society for that matter.
Yeah.
So my cousin, Beth, reaches out to me. He'd been to prison for trafficking heroin, and she'd been in the game for a while, you know. She had 4 years clean that time, and she's still clean this day. She's an amazing woman. You know, she's all about her recovery and helping others, and she comes to pick me up. They take me to Kentucky, and I'm working for her husband. He's got a business. We're there for a little bit, and I'm sober, doing good. We come to Florida. The same deal. Get a job, working. Start making these videos about my recovery and about recovering out loud, telling my story to hopefully help other people not make the mistakes that I've made that's led me, you know, to losing my kids. It's led me to losing everything I've ever owned three times over.
Mm-hmm.
Many relationships, many people that I've hurt, a lot of amends that I don't know if other people are going to be willing to make for me. You know, I've tried my best to clean myself out of the street. Everything that I've been through in life, though, like, it had been worse. Every time I had been arrested, for some reason, by the grace of God, like, he has kept me from prison. Like, he's always pretty much gave me a slap on the wrist. And then saying that as well, like, he's protected me through so much. I've been in so many wrecks where I should not be here. The Harley wreck was just one. It was another wreck in high school when I was with that girlfriend that I was with all through high school.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the car. It was me, her sister in the back seat of two or Jimmy. Her mom was in the passenger seat, and her sister's boyfriend was driving. He's driving. He falls asleep at the wheel. We're coming back down the interstate from Tennessee to Indiana. He goes in a median, comes out, overcorrects. Jimmy flips three or four times.
Jeez.
None of the girls or me had a seatbelt on in the back. really held on top of me. And I take their fall on top of me as it's flipping. Bam. Flip. And I think my back went through like the rear quarter glass of that tubular Jimmy and ended up like whatever kidney or bladder or something. I pissed blood for a couple weeks. I know that. And that was about the worst of any injury that anybody had it at. And DJ, the driver, had some stitches in his elbow. And there's just been so many times where God has been in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and like this time, like I've been through recovery programs, NA programs, facilitate recovery programs. And it's nothing against them. They're all great programs. But for me, I did it this time. I pray to God, saved me from the depths of hell. My God is big and he loves me, and I know that. Since I've been here in Florida, I've been, you know, back into church, back into the Bible, doing everything I can to learn the knowledge and to spread the love that he has to offer. And I'm going to keep doing that. And I'm going to keep doing me. I'm going to keep making my videos. Like, and I don't even realize it. And when we put our stories out there publicly for people to hear it, regardless of what some people might think, it helps. There are people that it does help. I mean, I've had so many people message me since I started putting it out there. Like, I had done my videos for the last year, but up until the last week and a half, I didn't put them out there to groups. I didn't have any groups as far as recovery on my page. I didn't even know anything about it. I found out about it. And now the outpour of support has been phenomenal. But I can only tell you what's helping me this time and what I'm doing this time differently. And that's just, you know, loving God and putting all that drive and motivation that I used to put in running and driving and applying that to my life. And to know, like, I was meant for more than this.
Yeah.
To know that there's more beauty to life than chasing some high or idol or being of the world. For me, it's just wanting to make the best name I can for myself and leave an example for my kids, you know, something to be proud of. You know, hopefully one day I'm going to be able to be with my friends again. You know, I can't even try to talk to them until they're 18 years old. And if they even want to be a part of my life, that's, you know, up to them. And I'm going to be doing everything I can to make sure when that time comes that they can look at me and be proud of who their father is. Because regardless, they know my heart. They have seen me at my best times. I was there to raise those kids for a time. And I loved them more than anything. And a shitty father was something I was not when I was sober. I was a great father. What made me shitty was when I started in dope again. Like, we know, like, everybody says, like, you know, addiction is a disease. And I know I'm going to have a lot of backlash for this. And that's fine. But, like, at some point, you have to realize, like, you don't choose to get cancer. You know what I mean? That's not a choice. That's a death sentence that you don't have a choice with. You have a choice with drugs. You can only use the excuse of addiction, disease, my mother's fault, my daddy's fault, abandonment faults for so long. I get all that. I've been through everything I just listed.
What do you get?
You know, at some point you do. You have to want better for yourself. You got to know this is what you want. This is what you need to do, and do it. Right? Like I've said before, like, ain't nobody going to do it for you, but you, right? Recovery has got to be wanted. And for the people out there that are trying to help someone recover, you know, you feel like you're spinning your wheels, and you just don't understand why they won't listen, and what's it going to take, and, well, I mean, they've got kids, surely that's enough to do it. Well, no, honestly, it's not. It's not. I know I say addiction's not a disease, but I will say some drugs and a lot of them are demons. Because when that's, it's like all those things that we know we're not supposed to do, we do it. Pornography, like cheating, like all of that stuff, gambling. I mean, all these addictions that everybody's trying to beat already, you put that in with meth and like you just have a whole world of craziness.
Talking a little bit about mental wellness and mental health and kind of the feelings of drugs really being an addiction or being a choice that you made. Tell me how you feel about that.
I mean, I feel like, you know, To some extent, yeah, it can be a disease. But for the most part, you know, as like a whole mental wellness, when I say that, like, you got to bring in traumatic, you know, I can't even think of the words right now.
Traumatic events.
You know, yeah, from your past, that you lost somebody that you loved due to death or relationship. Maybe you went through something that was more crazy, you know, maybe somebody took advantage of you one night or something like that, you know. All that plays a part, I feel like, in our addictions. We're all trying to cope with something, you know, and I feel like that people need to really look at addiction more towards the mental health aspect more than as a disease. Like, honestly, you dig deep to find out what's really putting this person down in their dumps like this to be wanting to numb something, you know, and that's my feeling on that.
You're correct, because the stats on addiction is 90% of addiction is based around trauma. So that's absolutely correct. Where the addiction side comes in is when we get physically addicted, right? And our body now needs the drug, or we're going to go through withdrawal and be sick and all those things. The mental addiction side of it is, you know, stems from wanting to cope and mask and numb and all those things from, like you said, traumatic incidents that we've been through. You told me a little bit ago that you had been diagnosed with PTSD. Yeah. And for most of us, what do we learn that PTSD is? For the average person, we've learned that that is based with veterans, right?
Yeah, right.
That veterans go through PTSD, and we all understand that as a whole. That's right. Like a huge traumatic, you know, things that they have been through that those of us who haven't been through could never really understand, right?
Yeah, I can never imagine.
Yeah, and God bless them for everything they've done. So that's how, like, the average person equates it, right? So we don't ever think that all of the things that we've been through in our lives, even though they're traumatic, we don't equate them with PTSD. I have also been diagnosed with that and didn't understand that was even a thing. Like, how could that be, right? So I really didn't believe it. I really chose to just, like, ignore that, put that in the little box. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I didn't believe it. But as I've done the work and done the healing and taken the journey and been through the counseling and been through all the things, I understand a little bit more now about what that means and how that plays a part in our lives and how that plays a part in the things that we keep doing over and over and over. Relationship things that we do, abandonment issues that we have, all of the, you know, situations and things that we've been through, right, cause us to keep masking and keep doing that, because sometimes doing that work to unleash all of that is hard.
Yes.
It's hard and it's painful and it is all of those things. Not gonna lie, it's hard, but it's necessary too.
Very, very.
How do we ever... You have to forgive people and people have to forgive us, but the first person we have to forgive is ourselves and learn to love ourselves first, right?
Definitely.
How do we give love if we don't love ourselves?
Yeah, we can't. We can't. I've learned, I can't. And, like, you know, from all the failed relationships in the past, like, and not knowing anything about PTSD and then leading into my marriage and then my divorce, you know, and then being diagnosed with that, it's,
you know, you talked a lot about through your story. And I let you, you know, you talked through your story and I tried not to interrupt. I wanted you to stay on point with that because it's very important to get that out. You know what I mean? Yeah. You hadn't shared it a lot and it's really important to get our stories out. First of all, we get them out of our head and out of, it just helps us. You know what I mean?
It helps us. Yeah, no, definitely. Oh, like, probably. You know, then, like, after what I was getting to is, you know, like being diagnosed with PTSD. Now it's like, since like 2015, 2016, when that happened, now I see that I did deal with that previously before my even marriage. And, like, I brought all of that baggage through every relationship. And every relationship, like, I basically just self-sabotaged just by, like, the constant worry of being hurt, the constant worry of being lied to, the constant worry of being left, you know what I mean? And being the one hurting and them just going on about their merry way. So it's like... I see now, like, you know, as I'm healing, as I'm going through my recovery, dealing with emotions raw, like, how important it is to self-heal, you know, and it's, to me right now, like, that's all I'm concentrating on. Like, girls, like, relationships is not in my mind, like, because I know it's just, I'm going to ruin it, you know what I mean? I know I'm not healed enough to even try to do that yet.
And, you know, Flip, give yourself some grace. You know what I mean? Give yourself some grace on that because you've been through a lot. And don't beat yourself up on that. Yeah, you've drugged some things around. You've brought some things in that you hadn't healed. We all do that, right? Mm-hmm. We all do that. And you're just in a different place now of really, really wanting to heal that and wanting to get better and wanting to do better. And that's a great place to be. You know, it's hard, but it's a great place to be. And you're doing awesome. Like I saw you last night. I mentioned that you were on a Facebook Live called Sober Vibes, right? Tell us a little bit about that. What was that about?
It was good. I like that group. They're awesome. They have some great admins. You know, they help me out by, you know, they share a lot of my content. I get a lot of feedback from people, and it's a good atmosphere. They don't judge people for whatever the recovery is and how they're doing it. Then kudos, as long as you're recovering. And
this is your host, Joe Summers. I just wanted to pop on and take a quick minute to apologize for the technical difficulties in this recording. I live in Oklahoma, and we are having severe weather and severe tornadoes. And I do want to take a moment to pray for the towns and families and loved ones that were severely affected. Sulphur, Barnstall, Bartlesville, they were really hit hard and lost a lot. Please just take a minute to send up some prayers, some love, some light, some thoughts for them. And thank you to Flip for being so gracious through this recording with the internet issues. And sorry for talking over each other sometimes. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah. So recovery is progress, not perfection, right? Right, we all recover differently. And
everybody's going to recover differently. You know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, some people are NA, sober recovery. You got to work the steps. And, you know, cool. If that's what you do, that's what you do. Like for me, I've worked those steps in the past. I've done them 5 times over. Last night, I had a guy ask me during that live, you know, if I was working the steps. And, you know, and he's one of the admins, and he's cool. I love this guy. And I told him, no, I'm currently not. And we talked a little bit after the live, and he got me thinking, you know, with my self-healing and some of the stuff I do need to work on, it might not be a bad idea for me to, you know, try to work the steps again at this stage of my life, because I'm thinking differently than I was before in my 20s and my 30s. Like, I'm 40 now, so it's like, yeah, I'm over, like, I'm trying to, like, live a little bit of life now. I've been dead all these years, if you ask me. All these years of use, and I ain't been living. I've just been dying, so.
Yeah, you're right. And, you're right about that. You are in a different place, and their steps mean different things when you're in a different place.
Yeah, yeah.
And that big step, you know, step number one, they're right here on my wall. We admitted we were powerless and that our lives had become unmanageable, right? You already know that. Yeah. You know that has happened. That is true. That is a step you have worked. Yeah. But there's also the part about amends, making amends.
Yes.
You also have to make amends to yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever done that. You know, I don't think so, right?
Right. I mean, I carry that burden about my sister and that story, you know, we talked about, like, I carry that heart on my heart a lot, and my kids losing them, like, I beat myself up every day about it. Like, I do, because
you will know, life could have been differently this time.
They could have it better in life.
There's different things on your heart.
I chose to be selfless
than there was before. So
I chose to be selfish. I chose to use drugs, and it's bad. You know, I did love my kids with all my heart. I love them sober. I was good. Like, I was a great dad. And there's just times in my life I couldn't beat it. And like I said before, I'm thankful for that. You know, I'm thankful for it now. Yeah. But yeah, and as far as the group live went last night, everything looked good. I was able to tell my story, you know, my testimony, and people had a lot of feedback, and there was comments going off all the time, but it went pretty good. And I hope to do more of them, because it's just going to get easier for me, and the better I can get to talking to people and doing with my words and slowing myself down, I feel like I can really get my story out there and hopefully do some help.
You know, every time for me, I don't know how it is for you, but every time that I have told my story, I won't say every time, but a lot of times that I have told my story, something different comes up. Like a different emotion, a different feeling, or a different, like, ooh, I might need to work on that.
Or a different memory. And sometimes you even forget something in a testimony and then remember it in the next testimony.
It's healing for you. You know, it's healing for everybody, but it's really healing for us to be able to do that. And when those new things do come up, it's like, ooh, I do have some things to work on, you know, so we're never done. We're never done with the work. This is lifetime. This is progress. And like I said, not perfection. We need to keep going. It's a lifetime journey. That doesn't mean that we have to worry about being sober for a lifetime. We just got to worry about it being today, right?
One day at a time.
And I know that's cliche and everybody's you know, when they hear it, but it's the absolute truth.
It honestly is. I can come home and every day I go to work, you know, I try to be in a good mood. I try to be that guy to everybody else. Like, I make them tell me good morning. Like, hey, I don't let the younger guys walk past me without telling me good morning. They're like, you better tell Flip good morning or he's going to ride your ass all day. Because I want to make sure everybody's, you know, having a good day and joking around. And then, you know, something might bring me down on the way home. And once I get home, you know, maybe I see something about my kids and I get upset. Whatever it might be, like, I will go to bed, I'll play on it hard. And then I wake up the day being thankful that I'm here, that I'm sober, and I don't carry that in from last, you know, into that next day. I just start over every day.
Every day. Every day is a new day, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we're not going to get down. It doesn't mean we're not going to get sad. It doesn't mean we're not going to have a hard day.
You have plenty of them.
It just means you're learning new tips, tricks, tools in your toolbox to get through those days.
Yes.
And our toolbox keeps getting bigger. You know?
I need a roll around one right now.
Right. And it keeps getting bigger. And now you got the biggest Snap-on toolbox there is. And
at least I had to pay Snap-on prices for this. But actually, with all the bell money and attorneys, I'm done did it.
A few times over. And, you know, that's another side of it, too. Just the money. Money through this process is ridiculous. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I've beat myself up over that over the years. I'm like, I can't change that. Let that go. You know what I mean? Those are things you did to yourself. Let that go.
Yeah. Not only did we like spend a lot of money, like as far as me, like when I was using, you know, I spent a lot of money using. But when I was sober, I was still always chasing that money. You know what I mean? Like money was everything to me. It always was. Like, same grow up with it. I wanted to have a nice house. I wanted to have nice cars. I was going to prove to everyone I went to school with that I was more than what people thought I was, you know?
Right.
But now, like, I really don't make much money on the hour like I used to make. Not like I did in Boston. Out there, I made like 60 an hour. Here, I'm only making $20 an hour. And child support still comes out and like, I'm living check to check. But in saying all that, you know, I'm happier than I've ever been. You know, I got a 99 little crappy Honda with 400,000 miles. Like, it is a turd bucket, but it does not break down. It gets me to work and home every day. It does not leave me stranded. You know, and I come payday, I might have $20 in my checking account, but hey, it's $20 in my checking account. It's not negative, you know, and I've got food in my fridge and my dog's fed and
You're not chasing all the time. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you just, it becomes like a time in your life you just want peace.
Exactly.
You just want peace.
And if people's going to love me, they're going to love me for me. Like, I'm not going to sit here and try to please people like that, like I have in the past. I know I have a good heart, and like, I've been through some crap, and everybody has, and some of the things I've done, I'm not happy with. But at the same time, God's always been by my side. He's always had my hand. I've always felt conviction when I've done things. It's not like I did them and never thought about it. You know what I mean? Like, it might have been a week later, 2 weeks later, but there, you know, it came. Like, when I come down and I thought about what I did, like, oh, man. That's a bad one, Flip. Like, I don't know if he's going to forgive you for that one, but God is good. He does, you know, but the sin's a sin. No matter how little or how big, it's all same, and he forgives us just the same, so.
Absolutely. And you're out there and you're doing good work. You're doing good things and it's coming from your heart. And, you know, you're encouraging and you're hopeful and helpful to others. And that comes from, you know, you turn your pain into purpose, right?
Yes.
And it doesn't mean you don't still have pain, but turning it into purpose and trying to help the next person up is huge. It's huge. Yeah. And that's a blessing.
That's what I talk about. Like, just, you know, finding beauty in that struggle. You know what I mean? Yeah. Finding the shine in your storm. Like, there is always something that you can get from that, you know?
Always. And it's not about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain.
Exactly. So, that's one of my favorite quotes. I used to say that all the time. I think I got it from chicken. What is it called? Soup. It was chicken soup.
Oh, soup for the soul.
That quote from there. I read it years ago. That's a lot of people too. They ask me like, how do you come up with your different reels and stuff like that? And man, one of my biggest inspirations is a guy named Trent Shelton. I don't know if you've ever.
My fave. Oh, yeah.
And, like, I've watched that guy for probably the last 7 years. And, like, he might not have suffered addiction the way I have, but he is, like, his words, his motivation, the way he talks, like, he speaks to everyone. It don't matter what walk of life you've been in, whether you've been in the alley shooting dope or, you know, or something financial, whatever it might have been. Like, I don't know how to say it, but he's the man. Like, his words speak truth, and he's, like, one of my biggest inspirations.
Yep. I listened to him. I got his new book, Protect Your Peace. I was on the pre-order. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I've been with him forever. He has really inspired me. And you're right. He hasn't maybe been through some of the same things that we've been through, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. No. Like, yeah, he had his whole life set for him. You know, I mean, he was a man going to the NFL, making money, like, and all that happened. And, like, and he made something, you know, he changed his perspective. And that's something I say a lot. And that's something I've picked up from him. Like, and that's true. Changing your perspective is powerful. Like, it will change your world.
It's the way you, I have a friend right now and I'm talking with her daily. And one of the things that she walks around saying that I want her to change is I'm broken.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not. Stop that right now and say, I'm healing. I'm freaking resilient. I got through all the things that I got through. You're not stop walking around with that negativity of I'm broken and change that wording and that perspective and that mindset that I am healing. And that's a huge, and that, you know, Trent Shelton does that. That's a huge just mindset shift, all those I am statements, you know, and that's huge in mental wellness. It's getting your mind right.
A lot of people probably would watch a video of him that was like, you know, in recovery and probably not think too much of it. But like, if you gave that guy a chance and you really listened to his words, it helps you in every aspect of life. It honestly does.
I listen to a lot of people. I listen to a lot of books and a lot of, and those are things that help me in recovery. You know what I mean? And not just in recovery, everyday life. You know what I mean? Just life lessons, having that like routine in the morning and the things that you do for yourself to just start your day right. That makes a big deal for me. Maybe not for everybody, but that's a big thing for me. Just to continue to keep that mindset and that growth right.
Yeah.
So, and mental health. I mean, that's a part of all part of mental health is keeping your mindset right. So not always easy.
No, it's not. No.
Yeah.
Battle can be real.
Yeah. And life's not like a bucket of cherries all the time. You know what I mean? For anybody. So everybody's got to work on that and try to keep their mindset right. So
yes.
I appreciate so much what you're out there doing. And I am excited to share this episode because I've been watching you. I don't even know how I started seeing your stuff. I don't even know where it came up, where
it was probably in a recovery group because like I said, I wasn't sharing. I just had my friends on my Facebook that I was sharing my content to, and no one really even understands what I'm going through, you know, that's on my Facebook. Like a 2% might be users of my Facebook friends. And so when I finally found recovery groups online, which is just less than like 3 weeks ago, you know, I just happened to share something in there, you know, and I had a lady hit me up not too long ago. She said she didn't know what to do. She said, I've been wanting to quit and I just don't know what to do. And I told her, like, look, I'm not being a dick when I say this. Forgive my language, but I told her, and I won't go into detail, but I was very blunt with her. And she went to rehab that night, and she's still there 12 days later. So, like, and I get people, like, I had the son's mom hit me up, and she said, hey, my son's, you know, 18 years old, he's in rehab, he's wanting to leave there and go out to San Diego, California, can you please talk to him, you know? So I tried to talk to him, and I... my Facebook goes off every day, all day. And so it's like, I'm not a counselor, you know, I'm not a drug addiction specialist, but I'm going to do my part. If there's something I can say that makes sense to someone else and reaches them, then I'm going to take the time to do it. But my sobriety is number one. And if somebody's needing to talk to me, I'm there for them. You know, I don't say that stuff in my videos just to say it. I mean, you know, I mean, people can actually reach out to me.
Yeah. You know, I did go and get my peer recovery support specialist certification. I did get that and my, you know, transformation life coach certifications and all those things because a lot of people do talk to me about recovery and about those things. And I'm not a counselor. I'm not a therapist. Just like you.
Yeah.
We got to be clear about that. We're not here to diagnose anybody or anything like that. But we can visit with people that just need to talk and that need to chat and need some resources. And, you know, most people want to know what has worked for you.
Yeah.
What, like she said, what do I do? What can I do? Well, all you can really do is tell her what you would do or what you can do. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's just giving that support. It's really just about being there to support people and see that our world makes a change for the better, you know, because we're killing ourselves. We're literally killing ourselves over some nasty, disgusting drugs that we're putting in our body.
And it's either we're dying together or living together. I mean, and we need to be there for everybody, and we need to, you know, root each other on, and like these recovery groups online and doing like this with the podcast. Like, it's awesome. It's a whole new world I knew nothing about until in the last month. And it's really like fueled me. It's my new kind of habit. Like, I'm just going hard every day at it. Like, this is my life right now, and I'm loving it.
I think it's great. I think it's great. And, you know, just putting that to, again, it's just turning your pain into purpose. And it makes us feel so much better too, because I don't know about you, but during addiction and during all of those many years of crazy, you know, we hurt a lot of people. We're taking, basically, you know what I mean? Yes. Hurting a lot of people and doing all that. And it feels good to be able to give back, you know?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. It's like, it's very humbling. Like, it really is
humbling. It's humbling. It's healing. It's, I don't know. It's just a beautiful thing to be able to see the spark in someone's eyes again. You know, you can see the happiness, or just see the joy coming back, because you do lose that. You absolutely lose that, and you almost feel dead inside. So
definitely do. I have people, had a couple people are, you know, message or comment on my stuff. They said, you have such a glow to you.
It's not though.
No, it really isn't. You can see it in my eyes and anybody's eyes that have been through hell with addiction. When they're doing right, you know. I mean, you just see it. There's a glow.
And I could feel it. I could feel it coming from you. And that's why I reached out to you.
That's why I can't tell people that. Like, I've had people comment about my Facebook page. Like, when I was setting this up, when I was doing my videos and everything, I started getting all these things about monetization and all this. I don't know nothing about that stuff. So I'm setting it up, and like, I'm figuring, I thought I was making a payout account to like get paid from Facebook for ads. Well, then it's like subscribers, and now I can't even get that off my page. Like, it's on there. And so I've told people, please, you know, I don't want anybody that's listening to my stories or my advice to pay for my content. Like, if they end up subscribing, I'm sorry, you can subscribe, but you're not going to get anything extra. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I'm there for everybody. I'm not there to make money off of people who are going through addiction. If I'm going to get paid, let Facebook pay me for some reason or something. But
Right. I did the same thing, Flip. I was trying to fix my Facebook page and I lost it. And it was right as I was starting my podcast and right as I was like starting something new, and I lost my page. Right. Yeah. And now it's changed to like, I don't even know what it says, digital something or other. I don't know about all that stuff either. I don't have any idea about how all that works. Starting from scratch, one follower, two followers, because it's, you lost all. I don't care about that. I don't care about any of that. That doesn't, like, that is not what fuels me to want to help anybody. You know what I mean?
As far as like followers for me, like, it doesn't bother me if they unfollow me, but I do get super excited when I get new followers, because I know it might be somebody to, you know, somebody else that might be able to hear my story, and it might not help them, but if they happen to share it to someone else, and it's a family friend, a son, a cousin, a brother that might need it, then that's awesome, you know. But I'm not there for the subscribers and that money. I think one person actually subscribed to me today, and they're going to be upset, because I don't, like, if I'm posting stuff there, I'm posting for everybody. You're not getting nothing exclusive, because that's not what I'm there for. Like, thank you. I appreciate the 99 cents, whoever you were, but I'm sorry.
We're not technical. We're not technical people. We're not IT people.
I'm definitely not that. Like, my videos come out the way they do. You're lucky you're getting that, because I'm not an editor. I'm not a videographer. Like, I'm none of that.
When Mariana listens to this, she's going to laugh, because I've got somebody that helps me with my back end stuff on the podcast, because I'm like, I don't know. I'm getting better. I'm not going to say I'm not technical anymore. I'm getting way better. So that's the whole thing. I'm getting better, right? Way better, and I'm learning as I go. So that's all we can do. It's just
that's
part
all
of
we can do is be the best version of us every day. Just keep going. We're doing better.
Well, thank you very much, Flip, for everything that you do and everything you're doing out there. And I'm really happy for you, really proud of you. We don't really know each other. This is all new. Like, we haven't been longtime friends. That's just me from my heart saying I am very proud of you and very happy for you on your recovery and what you're doing. And I didn't know you before, but I can definitely see where you're headed, and it's all good things.
I appreciate that. And I'm proud of you too. I know you've had a story, and I'm glad you're here with us, and I appreciate you having me.
Thank you so much. And we're going to be talking. We'll do something together. We'll be doing more. I feel it. Yeah. So I appreciate you so much.
Appreciate you. Have a good day.
Have a great Sunday, okay?
You too.
I am so grateful that you join me for this week's episode of Breakfast of Choices. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe, give it 5 stars, and share it to help others find hope and encouragement. The opposite of addiction is connection, and we are all in this together. Telling your transformational story can also be an incredible form of healing. So if you would like to share it, I would love to hear it. You can also follow me on social media. I'm your host, Joe Summers, and I can't wait to bring you another story next week. Stay with me for more Transformational Thursdays.